This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 168, and I'm your host Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 160 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week I'm talking to Dr. Robert Davis about his book, The Consciousness Connection: Extraordinary Human Experiences and the Nature of Reality. Robert Davis is an internationally recognized research scientist and author. He conducted research, taught, and was an administrator for the State University of New York for over 30 years. Hi, Bob. Thanks a lot for coming to the podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you again, Simon.
So we're talking about the book, The Consciousness Connection: Extraordinary Human Experiences and the Nature of Reality. And a lot of the book is kind of about the afterlife, but you've also got these chapters about UFOs. So how do you see those two things relating to each other?
Well, maybe it comes under one umbrella, and this is what I think is lacking in our profession. We don't have the functional organization of the terminology that shall we call this extraordinary human experiences. And it comes in many diverse forms, near death, as you allude to, even interactions with non-human entities or intelligences, unidentified aerial phenomena, mediumship, ESP, autistic savants to demonstrate ESP, among many other kinds of near-death and out-of-body states that fall under the rubric of these extraordinary experiences, of which millions of Americans have had. And that's why we do need a paradigm shift to recognize the relative importance of these related topic areas, because they do raise tremendous questions. So your question is very appropriate. You know, why is there a relationship? And the relationship is language-based in part. Our language doesn't do this all justice in terms of what it implies to the individual who experiences these types of interactions, profound altered states of consciousness where their daily lives are dramatically changed in a moment's notice because of one reason or another. But they range in severity and type, and all forms of extraordinary experiences, of which there are actually 200 that have been identified, but they impact the consciousness of people in dramatic, profoundly transformative ways that change their personal and philosophical worldviews from that moment forward. And that's why I wrote my book, The Consciousness Connection. And in fact, I have a documentary that's now on Gaia.com called the same title, The Consciousness Connection, that tries to address this paradigm shift and the supporting evidence that we have from extraordinary human experiences. And that includes the near-death and out-of-body states, the ESP, global consciousness, spiritual awakenings, even biofield healing experiences that people have, long distance healing effects. These are intentions that try to bridge the divide that we have now with our materialistic paradigm science and the subjective nature of what people are really experiencing. These extraordinary, profound, impactful events that merit more serious attention by the scientific community, because people are wondering, why me? What happened to me? I don't know. My doctor can't explain it. My psychologist can't explain it. I can't. I can't find it in the books. Every now and then a podcast like Simon Brown's comes along and somebody talks about it. But it's an unforeseen force, an unseen disease in a way. And not disease isn't the right term, but people get caught up, shall we say, in the magnitude of these extraordinary experiences because you don't have sufficient answers for them. What do you tell a person who says they interact with a non-human intelligence? Many sane individuals do just that, and they're relieved when they're given the opportunity to do so with those who will not be skeptical or debunk their story. Because there is still a stigma that is negatively attached to the things that we're talking about, these extraordinary human experiences. The purpose of our film and book, in part, is to reduce that stigma so that we get a paradigm shift, a more objective view, in other words, of these kinds of subjective experiences that millions of people are having, to demonstrate that these so-called paranormal events are really normal parts of reality. You know, we live in a quantum world, and that's a weird world that we live in. And it's more abnormal than it is to be normal in some respect.
I was interested to read in your book that Jacques Vallée considered the UAP an old phenomenon in a new guise. So what do you think he meant by that?
Well, we simply have the same questions. We just wear much nicer suits. We don't get anywhere with the answers that we asked 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 10 years ago. We ask them still, and they still elude us. So it's a different guise. It's a different time. The calendar slips. The car we drive evolve positively, hopefully. But we still have those burning underlying issues that remain. What governs and regulates the force that causes this phenomenon to interact with non-humans? And I firmly believe that, as many do, and many still are skeptical about that. But it is a source of controversy. While times have changed, Congress still tries to seek answers. We get whistleblowers every now and then that come forward with astonishing accounts that we have back-engineered craft and biologic entities since the 50s. Every now and then we get this kind of information that leaks forward, and it goes essentially nowhere in terms of informing the public. What does the government, if anything, knows? What does the military know about the phenomena? What do we know about ESP, afterlife research, and all the rest of these kinds of experiences that are deserving of meritorious attention? So it's a different time and place, but you know, science progresses one funeral at a time. Max Planck, the founder of quantum physics, said that it's a slow evolving process. With the internet, however, with podcasts, et cetera, like you, Simon, word is getting around faster. There's a bit of an information explosion, in a sense, of spirituality, metaphysics, or altered states of consciousness. More people are doing DMT and psychedelic substances. Got to be careful. I don't advocate for that, but the point is that there's a reduction in organized religion and an increase in spirituality and metaphysics. So people are more turned on to look towards spirituality as a source of truth, and are turned off to the materialistic, reductionist, dualistic format that we currently live in. You know, consciousness is primary. The physical matter, you know, kind of is symptomatic of consciousness. That is fundamental, and we'd like to see very clear cut evidence of that. But the evidence is subtle, and it's in the essence of our subjective experience, who we are, what it feels like to be you. This is the essence of consciousness. And it differs from the subatomic scale to the cosmological. It's a form of information exchange between two entities, whether they're bounded empathically or not. There is an information exchange, a cause-effect, a yin-yang, black and white, one or zero, where a cause results in some effect and reaction or no reaction. And we see this at all levels of reality. That, to me, is a form of consciousness, that information exchange. And us humans, of course, have that. And we have that in ways that we don't fully understand yet. But that's why we need this paradigm shift to better understand and facilitate the profound impact of human intention on physical systems, on each other. This shared universal consciousness that people often call, talk about, there is a physiologic basis for that. We all have our individual brains, of course, and our consciousness, but when we have an empathic bond, an empathic bond with somebody, or in love with somebody, when we're resonating with somebody, our brain frequencies literally synchronize. There's a phase synchronization that occurs, whereby you have almost like two consciousnesses in one brain. There's something that can be said for, you know, another soul vibrating at your same frequency. We do see evidence of interbrain synchronization just like that.
You talk to Gary Nolan, and you talk about that in the book, and he's in the documentary. Mm-hmm. One thing he says is that he saw a UFO when he was age 7, and he saw some ETs in his bedroom when he was a kid as well. And I wonder about perhaps if they did that also on purpose to set him on a path to where he is now.
There are people that think there are, you know, we're being, there are puppet masters that manipulate us to do their bidding. I've felt that way too since my retirement. I have extraordinary experiences. They lead to a book, they lead to a film, they lead to podcasts, interviews, exposure, meeting new people. One thing leads to another. There's a cause and an effect. Gary Nolan could very well be on that path where there is a cause and effect, the cause being his experiences as a child, as you mentioned, where he was walking home one night, late morning, and he saw a craft over his house in some rural area. And then beings came into his bedroom when he was very young that he can't forget. He's a what do you call a polymath, a true brilliant individual in many different respects. I have great respect for him, and sure, he can very well be, and very likely is, biased, where he's the co-founder of the Soul Foundation, now a privately held institution that researches the UAP. And you know, to his credit, among others, they put on symposiums and do research in this arena. So, yeah, he has that burning itch, and we all get it from somewhere. You know, I got it from my different experiences. He got it from very possibly his adolescent experience with UAP. And he's very open about it, which is so wonderful. I had a Kundalini awakening about 5-7 years ago, and I rarely brought that up, a spiritual awakening that led me to write books and conduct a film. And there is this increased consciousness or awakening that people are experiencing in varying ways that people don't talk about. And I certainly didn't talk about mine only until very recently. I had a shared death experience, Kundalini. I saw UFOs. They each led to me researching topic areas that led to books being published, and again, a film being produced, and more films in the works as we speak. So it gives me something to do in my old age now that I'm retired. But I never gave this all second thought before retirement. Ever since my extraordinary experiences with UFOs, with a shared death experience of my colleague, where I knew she was going, knew she died, given to me by a message from her of her suffocating to death, and finding out later that she died at that exact moment, as well as my Kundalini awakening in Australia about 7 years ago. They've rocked my world. And I never would be writing books, doing podcasts, doing a film, you know, talking to you about any of this. And it's all a manifestation of a symptom of ego dissolution. You're more concerned about what revolves around you than you as a center of the ego of what revolves around you. You're not the center of attention. You're more concerned with the sensitivity of the ecology of our planet the goodness of humanity and then some. So your personal beliefs are shifted somewhat, and not entirely. There's always a long way to go, no matter what kind of spiritual awakening one may have. But nevertheless, it took me a long time to integrate my Kundalini awakening with daily life. It was that altering in personal, emotional, physiologic ways that I could write a book about. And it forced me to learn about Kundalini awakenings by reading books about spiritual, Kundalini Awakening by, I forget the name of the authors now. It'll come to mind later. Spiritual Kundalini Arising. It's called Kundalini Arising, an excellent book on the characteristics of Kundalini awareness, which is valid. Don't you see? The mind and body are two distinct entities. And when you have a Kundalini awareness or a mind altering event, like a full blown Kundalini awakening, you become aware of the mind-body distinction, where you are not your body. It is doing one thing, and your mind is doing a completely different thing, independent of the body. And it's you can't really explain it until you experience it, of course. But it is the essence of the foundation of duality of existence. And when you come to that realization, you get to realize that many of these phenomena that we are talking about, from UAPs to non-human intelligences, interactions with them and ESP, et cetera, are pretty much interrelated with the concept of consciousness. There is an energy behind the physical form that forms the basis of reality and which governs what is going on in our reality today. And at times we see essences of that altered reality, which appear to us as the paranormal. But that's quantum physics in action. And when you see quantum physics in normal reality, it looks like the paranormal, because quantum mechanics is paranormal. When you look at the behavior of subatomic particles, they behave in a very illogic way, just like the observer effect and non-locality, entanglement, superposition, etc., quantum tunneling. But it explains much of physical reality, of course. But how much can we extrapolate from that to human existence and behavior? And it seems that with time we can, because we see now that the brain, in fact, is a quantum processor, much more likely than not, and that quantum processing can occur in dark, wet environments, and that is the brain. There was debate about whether or not that could be possible, but we see evidence of that now happening. So we have quantum processing in the brain, and that's ongoing. You know, what does that imply for the brain, consciousness, extraordinary events, paradigm shifts, everything we're talking about? And I'm trying to bring it under an umbrella where we try to bridge the divide that exists among these different variables and try to give it some kind of meaningful perspective in terms of how to approach the study of the paranormal, parapsychology, consciousness, which include many of these topic areas that you allude to, UAP and non-human entities, and things of that nature. They're all interrelated at some level.
So can we talk about Darby Ranch and the Human Initiated Contact Experience Group? Is it Mike Merberg?
Yes, Mike Merberg, a good friend of mine. These Human Initiated Contact Experiences, or HICE5s, they're quite common now. Many are in England, as well as in the United States and worldwide. the one in Darby Ranch that Mike Berg's property where it was held once a month solicits about 100 people a month to sit around in a circle, meditate, and try to draw in these crafts, UFOs, non-human entities, for hours at a time throughout the night. And many times they are somewhat successful and it's captured on film of flashing light. It's a good time had by all. But we interviewed many people there for our documentary, The Consciousness Connection. Many people talking about their experiences with UFOs in the past, which was probably even more revealing than the night itself, where we tried to capture UAPs at the Darby Ranch that night. It was the interviews themselves of people's upfront and close personal experiences with non-human entities that were remarkable and had a lasting impression on my co-producer Dave Beatty and myself. Mike Merberg included, again, a good friend of mine. He's a lawyer down here in Tampa, Florida. And he's had many experiences. And he's well aware that many people also have many unusual experiences with non-human entities and are so relieved when they're able to talk to somebody for the first time about it, when they know they're not going to be ridiculed or denounced for it. And he talks about his, in other words, personal experiences, talking to people in all walks of life about their interactions, as wild as that may sound, with non-human entities, where they are, I hate to use the term, abducted by aliens. That's the old term. I'd rather use the term interaction with non-human entities or intelligences now. And about 25% of the population in the Phoenix Lights experience a study, and in the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research in Extraterrestrial Experiences study, reported that they were on board a craft and subject to medical experimentation. And maybe we can talk about the results of that, those two studies as we move on.
I was going to ask you about, it's the Edgar Mitchell Free Study, and you were involved with that, weren't you?
Yes, from about 2017 to 2019 or so, I was a member of the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Research Foundation for Extraterrestrial Experiences, and it was a remarkable study that we did, because we explored the physical, the psychological, the perceptual, the paranormal dimensions of non-hypnotic recall of interaction with non-human intelligences. And it gave us great insight into the phenomena. So it told us, among other things, that there's a wide range of physical and psychological and perceptual and paranormal events, not surprising, that occur in these ways. And they shift consciousness, whereby the majority in the free study, I think it was 75% of individuals who report UAP interactions describe them as non-physical. They're characterized by, shall we say, psychic, symbolic ways and attributes rather than a structured, conventional alien abduction scenario. They can unfold in an out-of-body state through telepathy. In fact, that's what's often reported when people interact with these non-human entities. It's in an out-of-body state or in a matrix-like reality. And some involve, however, physical interactions, you know, with being relocated from one place to another. But the majority of interactions is non-physical. And this is goes against what Hopkins and others have been saying about abduction, saying it was mainly physical. We're saying it's not. And this was supported, too, by recent research results by the Phoenix Lights Experiences Study of 2024 and the MUFON Experiences Study of recent years that says essentially the same thing. It's largely a non-physical phenomenon, although, again, people are on board a craft. So there's very likely more than one phenomenon occurring simultaneously. That's up for conjecture, obviously. So there's telepathic communication, not surprisingly, that predominates. But there's these sensations of expanded consciousness, perceptions of the holographic or hyperdimensional realities that people talk about. They talk about things that's hard to really grasp, literally, unless you're there. And in fact, we had a subset population of the 3,200 or so subjects that we had in the study. We did a study with 1,800 of them, and 80% of them experienced interactions with non-human intelligences that they wanted to last. They didn't want these kinds of experiences to end. It had, in other words, such a strong positive impact on their lives. You know, it was highlighting, in a sense, their actions were highlighting the transformative actions that it had on their philosophical outlook, their personal growth, to the point where they wanted their interactions to continue. The more they reported that they had these experiences, the more they wanted it. In other words, they adapted to it very, very easily. The first few encounters are certainly most fearful, but over time they adjust to the point where they're appreciative of it and benefit from it, so they say, on a long-term basis. You can say that they become aware of certain aspects of life that are so fundamental that they're altered forever because of it, and they lead a new life. There's been studies done with scientists who had these kinds of experiences with abductions, so to speak, or interactions with non-humans, and change their profession to one of health, to one where humanity is served in a more beneficial way than ever before. It causes dramatic impact on people's lives and their sense of expanded consciousness, and their attitudes are altered dramatically. So that's probably the greatest finding of all, even the fact that most participants who claim these kinds of interactions are receiving these comforting and transformative messages. There's a good 70% of them that are receiving reassuring messages. A good percent are receiving spiritual messages. 60 to 70% receive information about love and oneness. And in a sense, these are high numbers that highlight the findings, underscoring the profound spiritual nature of these encounters. When we're talking about people that are talking about the oneness and love and spiritual messages, we're so convincingly, in a manner that they express as realer than real, then it says that these messages mean something. You know, that they're receiving messages that encourage them to preserve life and biological material on Earth. they're receiving messages that we expect them to receive, like promoting ecological appreciation and advocating for more empathy and love towards the people and the planet that we live among. You know, I mean, these are idealistic things that we all want, and it's the absurdity, in a sense, of because this is something that these messages should be manifested, and people are believers of these kinds of messages, where they're moved by them and changed for the better because of them. So they go through that spiritual growth. They foster that deep connection with the so-called divine, with one's higher self. That they become more spiritual in nature than ever before, and it can come about because of an interaction with a non-human intelligence. Because close to 80% of them are considered positive in nature, and that varies among studies. The Phoenix Lights studies, for instance, which was the event of the Phoenix Lights in 97, when that wave of UFOs were seen over miles of the sky above Sky Harbor, Phoenix, Arizona, and four states at the time. But a recent study by my friend Russ Galpone, called it the Phoenix Lights Experience Study, surveyed 117 of them, and they shared similar results to the free study. And I know you have questions about that, and we can get to that eventually. But it's interesting that we do see these parallels among studies looking at a similar kinds of phenomena.
And I was interested to reading the book, Professor John Mack, because you were saying that the people have these abduction experiences and they're really quite terrifying to start with. But he said the helplessness and loss of control seem to be in some way designed to bring about a kind of ego death, which helps with spiritual growth and an expansion of consciousness. So it's like the non-human intelligence is purposely trying to scare you when they first interact with you to bring about this expansion.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Harvard psychiatrist and UAP researcher John Mack, he thought these were tangible events, these abduction experiences. They were otherworldly in nature, non-earthly in origin. And he did studies with over 300 individuals who reported that they had these interactions with non-humans. And over 90% of them said that they had these personal transformations that were long-lasting and beneficial. And they did foster spiritual growth. And it did result in an ego death, which could be interpreted in different ways, but it's generally a phenomenon that implies a deep psychological or spiritual change in the individual, almost like an ego dissolution, where, again, they're not the main center of attention anymore. They're more giving to others, more empathetic and sympathetic, and things that we want in people to be, in other words. So, yeah, but you see, there's also a parallel to the ego death. That's what people report when they have kundalini experiences. They too also go through this ego death, where they have this psychological and spiritual change for the better. And it is similar to the psycho-spiritual changes that we see with these UAP encounters. So there is overlap, and that's why I say there's you can make the case for there to be a unifying underlying principle for many of these extraordinary experiences, and that is the concept of consciousness. And once you get that ego dissolution, call it ego death, and there is a distinction, one becomes less self-centered and more giving to others. And that's a necessary component to, you know, the love that we should be sharing among individuals in a unified manner, as opposed to being isolated, alone, and ill-treated in the manner in which too many of us, unfortunately, are worldwide over time. And so we do have to be aware that we're still living in the era of dysfunction and primitiveness, still learning, in other words, with grumping with bear skins, but using stone knives, nevertheless, trying to make sense of it all, wearing the same suits, the different suits, as you alluded to earlier, but asking the similar kinds of questions. What is going on? Why me? Why others I care about? Why they are dramatically changed the way that they are in such a short period of time? You know, one of the interviews that we had, which moved me greatly, was that of Dr. Bruce Grayson, an NDE, near-death experiencer, research and psychiatrist. And he remarked, after meeting with one of his patients who had a near-death experience, he says he cannot believe, given the experience that he's had with many of his patients, especially one, he cannot believe the change that they incur over the course of a night relative to what medicine can't do in months or even years of trying using their traditional techniques. In other words, the NDE, the OBE, the extraordinary events so critically alters individuals for the better, largely for the better, in the short term and in the long term, if it's integrated well and supported well. And that's another story in and of itself, the supported by the professional community. We have to underscore that aspect of it as well.
It's a kind of, is it ontological shock, which is, for the listeners, a profound cognitive and existential jolt experienced upon encountering phenomena that drastically challenge existing worldviews. And I suppose for some people, it can be too much of a shock.
For too many people, it's too much of a shock, to the point where they will literally have anxiety disorders, paranoia, and a host of other psychological aberrations, because it is too difficult to manage, emotionally speaking. And much of that has to do with their emotional liability prior to them having a Kundalini awakening or spiritual event. They may be prone to having an anxious outcome. So it may not be entirely the result of the experience itself, but rather some of the onus goes on the individual who may be more prone to having a negative experience with it. But the point is, it does increase the possibility that people can have abnormal reactions to it. I think that addresses your question, does it not?
Yeah, it's a thing I think maybe with scientists who are so stuck with their worldview of there's no proof of life beyond Earth, that if they see a UFO or if you suggest it to them, it's just too much for them. And they almost get to a point where they put their fingers in their ears and start shouting out, "I can't hear you."
Well, if people are born with two eyes and two ears and have some degree of logical thinking and do their due diligence, they should have no doubt whatsoever that UAP is real, that interactions with non-human intelligences do exist and are believed to be real by millions of individuals, and will continue to be the case. And there is an aspect of the paranormal that is also associated with the UAP. And thus we again need this paradigm change that is called about for in both the book and the film, which you address as well through many of your guests. You talk about topics that are deserving of a scientific paradigm shift, where anomaly gaps exist, where science cannot address the mysteries that abound. And you address them beautifully, quite frequently, among many individuals to explore the mysteries of science and the essence of reality, which go hand in hand with one another.
So there's so much stuff with UAPs, as you say, that seem to be linked to consciousness and spirituality. But on the other side, there seems to be so much stuff that's physical, with people seeing these craft and also people who have contact having marks on their bodies. So it seems strange, you know, almost like you can't link the two up. Why is there all this physical stuff if really it's about consciousness?
Well, it seems that the free study results and the PLES, the Phoenix Lights Experience study, the MUFON study as well, they show that about 20% of them are negative, and that about 20-30% or so are physical. It is largely non-physical. And that's an important distinction that should be made.
So what do you think of this idea that perhaps what we're seeing now is a variation on ancient stories of encounters with all sorts of beings?
Well, this same phenomena has been going on for eons. You know, it evolved from the description of the elves and the gnomes in the European countries. And the medieval times, they counted of angels. There were supernatural beings in the Native American legends. They're present in religious texts. Even cave walls depict them. Archaeological monuments represent them. The Great Pyramid, among others. So the geoglyphs in the Nazca Desert in Peru add fire to that ancient astronaut theory that is very popular on TV, and which is probably a combination of sense and nonsense. But the question is too: are non-human entities co-inhabiting with Earth? Ever since humans lived between 6 and 2 million years ago on this planet, you know, maybe we're the visitors. Maybe, you know, we find new species every day. And maybe there is simply a different species that we run into, more advanced in some ways, or maybe less advanced in other ways, but they coexist with us. And they're just so different to us because of their advancements or the unique differences. That's why they behave absurd in the way that they do. They don't make any sense. We have reported artifacts from them, but it's like it doesn't make sense what the material that we receive from them, from a structured craft that's unknown, or receive a piece of material that's analyzed and has an isotopic ratio that is slightly different than anything else that is seen, but it is essentially lead. The question is, why was it disposed of in its unique location in the desert, in the middle of nowhere? Why would it be found there? And the absurdity of the issue, where people see a UFO, they take pictures of it, nothing appears. Or they take pictures of the UFO and it's completely morphs out of shape, as if it didn't register at all what they took. Tiradirani and Rutledge, astrophysicists, tried to study the phenomenon too. Every time they tried to use their electromagnetic equipment to study the Hasdalen lights in Hasdalen, Norway, and in another region in Nebraska, I believe, when they did try to, their equipment failed to function, indicating that the lights, the plasma lights, earth lights, the plasma, the fourth state of matter, it's an ionized gas. It's probably not a life form, but in unison, mixing it with the elements of the universe, you can get a form of an RNA genetic material, probably a precursor to life, put it that way. But it's probably not life itself. But nevertheless, these plasma too, while on the topic, they exist in our thermosphere, which is about 200-300 miles up altitude. And these have been mistaken for UFOs repeatedly, because they behave in much the same way that UAPs do as well. They come in different forms, shapes, and sizes, cones, cylinders, squares, rectangles that seem to change shape, shift their direction on a dime, leave no trace of propulsion, no sonic boom. They interact with the shuttle space station on numerous occasions, and as simply as that, we're studying more about them. And the more we do, the more we find that there's a very strange atmospheric light phenomena that can be rationalized. But at the same time, I don't mean to imply that all UAP are plasma-based events. They're not, but a good proportion of them certainly are. Yet there are certainly cases, again, that do indicate people are interacting with the phenomena.
And do you feel that these non-human intelligences will present themselves to the human race depending on the human state of advancement? Like now we're in a technological age, so they present themselves in a technological kind of way.
It seems they seem to roll with the times. And they conform to the social situation of the times, whether or not it's the blimps and the airships of the late 1800s and early 1900s, when dirigibles were popular, to the Foo Fighters of World War II, to the abduction scenario in the 50s, which is when it was really pronounced, much less so now, but still is. In fact, I know a lot of people who have been abducted, and I hate to use the term abducted, but interacted with non-human entities to the point where they develop what, Dr. Kenneth Ring labeled the paranormal, I forget what it was called now, the paranormal threshold mind. Something whereby people who have extraordinary experiences like UAPs, etc., they become so engrossed in the event and the experience that they had that they cannot focus their attention much on anything else. And they become more than a student of the topic, but they go down the rabbit hole and never come out to the point where they need some possible counseling. In order to try to come to terms, and I mean that in all sincerity, come to terms with what happened to them, because something quite pronounced happened to them. Let's be very honest. They believe it. Okay, whether or not it literally happened in this time and space, they believe that it happened. Okay, and that's what you have to deal with. And the fact that they're working 9 to 5 behind a big desk on Park Avenue in New York City, it doesn't alter the fact that they believe that they interact with this non-human intelligence, and this intelligence told them that we have to be more ecologically sensitive, or we're going to blow up, we're going to destroy ourselves, or blow us up, or love one another, because that's the answer. So the fact that people are astonished by this is what astonishes me. and what has led me down to this path of self-discovery and has led me down to this path of sharing my thoughts and my bullshit baffling brains in 500 pages of a book called The Consciousness Connection, Extraordinary Human Experiences and the Nature of Reality, and also a documentary called The Consciousness Connection that is streamed on Gaia.com. And you apparently have to subscribe to Gaia.com. That's not our decision, but you may be able to get it through one of the platforms that you might have, like Amazon Prime or Netflix. I'm not sure, but you may want to first check to see if you do. But nevertheless, that, you know, I learned a lot about researching, doing the due diligence for these topic areas, but most of my learning came through communication, through interacting with research scholars and individuals who've had extraordinary human experiences to the point where they're believable. And yet their stories are so profound, rare, and unusual that there is, as you mentioned it earlier, an ontological shock, such a profound shift in their worldviews based on that one incident that it is transformative to the point where they may need help with their marriage. They may need feedback about the job that they're in because they may not find themselves to be entirely happy with it anymore. They may need advice on many different things because their worldviews have shifted, have changed as a result of them becoming more spiritually aware and conscious, where in the past they never were before. And this is what many of them say, and this is why I am saying it. And again, I'm talking from personal experience too, having had these experiences, and I hate to be redundant about that. But that is the impetus for our discussion, in a sense, the rationale for a paradigm shift, why Thomas Kuhn in 1970 came up with the idea of the fact that we go through these types of paradigm shifts, whether it's Copernicus or Galileo, the quantum mechanics. You could even make a case for carbon monoxide to be a paradigm shift, climate change, AI to be a paradigm shift. But you also need to include the extraordinary human experience as a paradigm shift and devote much more attention, time, energy, money, resources in all shape and sizes to just that, the study of parapsychology. Because I think if you do, you're going to discover that the mind has great potential in terms of it manifesting aspects of extrasensory perception, manifesting its fundamental aspect of what is true nature of reality, realizing what the essence of life really is. And I think we do possess that information, but that information is largely inhibited because of the operation of our left logical-based hemisphere. It reminds me of Jill Bolt Taylor, when she had a stroke, a left hemisphere stroke, and she just used the right hemisphere. She realized that love and beauty predominated existence as opposed to the static, lifeless, boundless aspect of the left hemisphere, which is more language, logic-based. And she said if everybody could experience just the right hemisphere, which she did because of her left hemisphere stroke, the world would be much better off. People would be much happier. And that's what the takeaway she got. And since then, she's been lecturing on the topic and writing about it. You talk about a transformational experience. This experience of hers post-stroke had just that, where she can't get off the topic now. She's become an authority on how her mind changed her viewpoints of life. And now she believes in survival after bodily death. She believes in ESP, psychic function. She believes in universal consciousness. And people who have these extraordinary experiences come away feeling the same thing. And that's another aspect of my message here. Why do so many people come away from these experiences sharing the similar types of after effects that I'm describing here, and that which I'm sure your audience is familiar with? So we're talking about something that is profoundly impactful on individuals, and yet we can't explain to them the means for why it is. What happened to them? You know, will it happen again? And the many other questions that they have about that extraordinary experience.
This book is called The Consciousness Connection, Extraordinary Human Experiences and the Nature of Reality. And people can get that on Amazon. But can you tell us about your other books as well?
I wrote three other books, The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe? I wrote a book on life after death, analysis of the evidence. Those were published by Schiffer Publishing. Those are available on Amazon. And I wrote a book 2 years ago called Unseen Forces. And that's also on Amazon, Amazon as well. But this book, Conscious Connection, Extraordinary Human Experiences and the Nature of Reality, it's all of 500 pages worth of mind-blowing stuff. What can I say? I hope you enjoy.
And the documentary's on Gaia and maybe other places as well.
Yes, it's on Gaia, Gaia.com. You can get access to the Consciousness Connection film by Bob Davis and Dave Beatty.
Great. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Well, it's my pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for having me.
And that was an interview with Dr. Robert Davis about his book, The Consciousness Connection, Extraordinary Human Experiences and the Nature of Reality. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. My website is pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.